Welcome to the Men on Purpose podcast, featuring dynamic conversations with emerging and established visionary men on purpose. Thanks for joining us today as we celebrate the men on purpose who are committed, creative, courageous change makers all around the world. Now, here's the host of Men on Purpose, Emerald Greenforest.
And welcome to another episode of the Men on Purpose podcast, where we celebrate men on purpose and provide our listeners with wisdom and immediately actionable steps to be more purposeful, powerful, and positive in their impact and leadership. This is Emerald Greenforest, and today we welcome our very special guest, Devin Gallaudet. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, Devin. Devin is the editor-in-chief of In the Know Traveler, has visited 85 countries around the world, and is in the process of marrying his wife 100 times in 100 countries. So far, they've done it 20 times in 15 countries. He has appeared on Fox, NBC, Reinvention Radio, among others, and his writing can be seen in the Huffington Post, Travel Age West, Two Hawks Quarterly, The Citron Review, Turkish Airlines, Skylife Magazine, and others. Devin's memoir, 10,000 Miles with My Dead Father's Ashes, is available now to make you cringe in bookstores and will answer the question, what do you do when you lose your father's ashes? I am so excited to have Devin come on to the Men on Purpose podcast today. Welcome to the show.
Emerald, thank you so much for having me be here. This is an exciting day.
It certainly is. And I'm super excited because your book just recently came out. So I want to begin our line of questioning really with, where did you first get the calling that I think that you have to A, be a traveler, and B, to write a memoir? Tell us about your calling.
Yeah, and it was that. It was absolutely more of a vocational kind of experience for me. I quite literally had been told when I was in the third grade, a teacher handed me back a writing assignment, and she said, well, you'll never be a writer. Take a lot of woodshop classes. And I followed her advice, and I took a lot of woodshop classes, and I can fix everything in the house, which is very exciting, and my wife loves that idea. And I had always been a reader and had always been attracted to stories and storytelling, and was always, but I knew sort of in the back of my head that I just, this wasn't going to be any sort of path that I would be on. And then I ended up purely by mistake writing a short article that appeared in a small Italian publication. And it was like the best drug I had ever taken. All I wanted to do was like, I mean, I could get something published, but I'm terrible. And that's what I had in my brain. And I started writing travel articles, and I eventually started, a number of websites that are all travel related. And I kept doing this thing all the while thinking that, well, these are small ventures and I'm really, I'm not a good writer, all of those kinds of little lies that our brains sometimes tell us. And I ended up taking a creative writing class, and they said, write about family. And I wrote this story about my father that did get published, and a variation of it eventually ended up in the book. And it was, I'll be honest with you, every time the teacher said, no, you have to keep just digging, just keep writing more. Don't worry about any of that. And because I would be more than happy to say, yes, but I'm crazy and untalented and that's awful. And why would I subject any human being, even myself, to my own terrible writing? And they said, you can't worry about any, just keep telling your story. And after that class, I knew that this was something that needed to be done. Like, I had gotten into the gray area of, well, maybe I can tell enough of a story that it will be worthy to some other pimply-faced kid like myself who needs to know that their story is unique and interesting and terrible and funny and something worth identifying with in your own experience. And so that kind of was the underlying current. And then I started a writer's group in my living room to make sure that every week I would have new material that needed to be worked on. And that's how it started. And this happened for years. This, we met in my living room for years until there was a point where it was like, you know, okay, it's done. Like I had nothing left to say. And their thing was, okay, now you have to go sell it. And I thought, oh, well, that's, I'm going to take more woodshop classes. I want nothing to do with that. And that was a whole, you know, that was a whole secondary experience. But that's also part of what it is to be a writer, is that, you know, yes, it's a small dark room by yourself. And yes, it is telling stories on podcasts and reaching out to publishers and agents and doing everything that you can, which is, you know,
all the things.
All it's living life.
Exactly. Well, I'm really excited that you did all the things that you did. I want to dive in just really briefly into, I'd love to hear how it felt for you. I mean, you said it felt like, you know, when you did start writing, it felt like the best drug ever. But I'd like to ask you to kind of go in a different direction and talk about how it felt for you to be actually shut down by someone and then to carry that judgment of some other person on yourself and to actually grow and feed that judgment against yourself for all those years and the courage that was underlying in there somewhere that kept you moving ahead even though you were carrying both your dead father's ashes and all the judgment that this person put on you plus your own self-judgment. So I'd love to have you talk a little bit about that journey and about what you found allowed you to, you know, kind of get that burst of courageous air that allowed you to just, okay, I'm going to go through this anyway. I'm going to keep writing anyway. I'm going to do the class anyway. Like, what was the magic that kept you moving forward in spite of all of what you were carrying?
You know, I wish I could say that I was a courageous, brave individual, and maybe to some degree, and in a certain circumstance, I am. But really, I think what started happening was the pain of not allowing myself to be who I was became greater than the pain of preventing that from happening. Mm. It really did. Like there was a point, and here's the thing, like even though I had this sort of by the way, if she were alive today, she'd be about 160 years old. So she is, whatever purpose she served, at least certainly in my life, is so far removed. It is mind-boggling. And so at some point I had to agree with her a little bit because it was easier to agree with her. It was much easier. And I think this is true across the board in my life and I'm sure everybody else's life is that, you know, we have these voices that are jangling around in the back of our skull telling us we're not enough, we're not this, we can't do that, it's impossible, it's not right for you, or whatever rationalization or justification somebody comes up with. And then there is this other thing that's sort of like, I could read my work. Like I've read a lot of writing and I could read my own work and say, you know, there were times, don't get me wrong, like days I would read stuff and go, wow, you're a genius. And then I'd read the same paragraph a day later and go, wow, you're a complete idiot. And so there's that, but there's this other thing where I could really read like, wow, there's something in here. I just have to keep working on it and toiling over it and making it my thing and do it, you know, do it with feeling and passion and not accept less than my best effort. And so when I was doing that, I knew that I had something, even though Mrs. Jones was kind of sitting whispering in my shoulder. So even when I kept saying to other people, including myself, oh, this is not, it's too long of a shot. It's all of these things, I can't justify it. It's too time consuming and I'm worn out and not that talented and don't have enough fortitude and I'll never do it. And all of those voices. But the problem was anytime I would actually push the story aside and anytime I would not do this thing, I would really, and I hope I don't mean to get too woo-woo with you, but I would get myself out of alignment with myself.
Mm. That's not woo-woo, that's true.
Yeah, no, that's true, but it depends on who your audience is. But that said, I would get out of alignment with myself. And the more that thing happened, the more uncomfortable I became with everything. Like, yes, I had sleepless nights over paragraph and sentences, and should I say this thing? And wow, what will so-and-so think about it? I mean, mostly that person was my mother. You know, what is she going to say when she reads this story? Because it is not a book of compliments, to be sure. And so I had to share stories of myself that are uncomfortable. So I had all these rationalizations of why I shouldn't write, and when I didn't write, and when I'm like, okay, we're done, we'll just give up, it was fun, I would get this sense of not being in alignment with myself, which is a horrible feeling. It's I remember hearing a definition of shame that was, it's not that you made a mistake, it's that you're the mistake. And that's the closest thing that I could describe to it, is that when I stopped doing this thing that I knew needed to be done, I had this incredible sense of shame that doesn't come from outside. It wasn't my wife saying, oh, you're a jerk face, why didn't you do this thing? It was inside of me that was like, wow, man, you're not doing the right thing here. You need to just buckle down and batten down the hatches, and you need to go for it, good, bad, or indifferent. Because it wasn't about me getting rave reviews. Although, don't get me wrong, those are lovely. It was about that I needed to do this thing and I needed to see it through. And I guess that's where the word calling comes from. That's where we're like doing this thing that it's just, it had to move forward.
Yeah.
And I didn't, and it was against my will.
Yeah. Well, it's the thing that you can't not do. It's like, you can't not do it, because if you don't do it, it's actually disease producing within you, right? Is what
yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. So what's interesting here too, is I'm hearing that there was not only the calling, but there was at some level this invitation again and again and again for you to recommit. So when we come back from the break, it's already break time. I can't believe how fast it goes, but it's already break time. When we come back from the break, what I want to talk to you about is I want to talk to you about commitment. And then I'd love to have you talk to us a little bit, like just give us a little bit about this book and where people can find it. So we're going to take a short break. And when we come back with Devin, we will be talking about commitment and recommitment and recommitment and recommitment and about 10,000 miles with his dead father's ashes. We will be right back. And I want to thank all of our listeners who are downloading, rating, and reviewing. We've already had thousands of downloads from all over the world. We are now up to 50 countries downloading. Want to shout out this week to our listeners in Bulgaria, which may be one of the countries that Devin has been to. So we'll find out about that when we get back from the break.
The Men on Purpose podcast is brought to you by the Creative Age Consulting Group. Men, are you ready to take the leap and go deep to discover the most meaningful mark you can make with your life? Is now the time to consciously craft the legacy life you want to lead? Are you already a legendary leader looking for your big what's next? Creative Age Consulting Group is hired to help men just like you to gain clarity, create consciously, and commit courageously. Please visit timetomakeyourmark.com to apply for an invitation-only consultation. Be sure to apply for a consultation today if you have been inspired to receive support in serving your purpose and making your most meaningful mark. Once again, that's timetomakeyourmark.com, or click on the link in the show notes for access to the application.
And we are back with Devin Gallaudet, who is the author of 10,000 Miles with My Dead Father's Ashes. And before the break, we were talking about his calling and about how he has had multiple periods during the course of his writing career and his creation of this book where he fell off of the commitment wagon and then got back on the commitment wagon to ultimately bring it into its fullest fruition. So I'd love to have you talk, Devin, about when you were in those places where you were out of alignment and you started to feel that I'm out of alignment and I'm, you know, having it impact other areas of your life. Is there a simple practice that you exercise in your own life that you can share with our listeners that allowed you to both recognize you were out of alignment, number one, and number two, kind of snap yourself back in?
Well, in terms of the writing, I knew that I was out of it when I wasn't writing. it's no more complicated than that. When you're not writing, you have to send out query letters. And I knew whether or not I was sending out query letters every day or every week or every month or not at all. I knew those things were happening. However, the thing that really always got me back into it is that I got into a community, specifically like a, the literary scene here. People knew that I was working on a book. I had my writer's group. And so if I wasn't writing or I wasn't producing, I had people always asking me, how's the book coming along? Or how did that query letter go? Or I heard you were looking up some agents. Did you find the people that you wanted to send them out to? And, once in a while, even when I isolated, because I knew so many people within that community, I had people who would randomly, and I just talked about this. I did a book launch in Long Beach where my wife and I live. And one of the readers I had there was this woman, Toni Ann Johnson, who is incredibly talented. And she quite literally would have this knack of calling me up when I was like, forget it, I'm done. And she would call me up the next day and she would say, oh, well, how's it going? Oh, it's not going so well. She, what are you crazy? Send it out now. Do it this second. And that's what I did. I listened to those people because me left to my own devices is not a great thing. I need a community and I need team members and I need to be somebody else's team members. And because, when I talk about my own goals and needs, it's easier for me to be of service to others than it is to just tell myself to get off my butt and start writing or start sending or start talking or start doing whatever it is that I needed to do.
Beautiful. I love that. Having community is one of the marks of a man on purpose for sure. So can you tell us a little bit about the book? Just the title alone is pretty cool. A little bit about the book and where people can find it so that our listeners can go ahead and indulge themselves in some amazing reading material.
So the long and the short of it is that my father was a liar, a chief, and a thief, and a con man. And I mean that with as much love in my heart. Like, I can't even begin to tell you, like, he is still absolutely my greatest hero, an interesting and funny guy. And for the first, the first part of my adulthood, I tried to be just like him. And remember, we were talking about that getting yourself out of alignment kind of thing. And that's how I was living, was completely out of alignment with who I was. Anyway, I received a call from his seventh wife, letting me know that his last request was to be scattered off the coast of Cadiz, Spain, so he could return home. The only problem was he was not Spanish. He had probably never left the country. And then I took him anyway, and then I managed to lose the ashes. So it's totally ridiculous, and it is also about sort of like how do you love the ne'er-do-wells in your life, and how do you accept them, and how do you hate them, and how do you struggle with these relationships that we are given by who knows what. And so it's about a lot of things. And I think at the very least, most people are going to come away with, wow, that was a wild ride.
Fascinating story. And so where can people find the book, Devin?
They should be able to find it anywhere. It's certainly available online, pretty much every online bookstore, certainly Amazon. I highly recommend IndieBound, which is a company that hooks up people with local independent booksellers, which I think is always a lovely thing. Certainly Barnes & Noble.
Do you have a URL for people to get in touch with you?
Oh, yeah, totally, totally. Yeah. It's devingalladay.com, and I'm going to spell that D as in David, E, V as in Victor, I, N as in Nancy, my sister's name. Galladay, G as in George, A, L, A, U, D as in David, E as in Edward, T as in Tom.com.
Perfect. So we will actually have that in the show notes for folks as well. So you can go to devingalladay.com. Is there links on that page also for people to buy the book?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Awesome. No, I link to everything.
Okay, great. Yeah, I figured that you would. So I want to move off of the book and on to the idea of creation, because I think as a writer, you're actually in the role of creation, but also as a husband, you and your wife have been co-creating a really fantastic, wonderful journey. And I love how you have created a life for yourself, Devin, where you've woven together a number of passions. Like, you really strike me as a man who has not compartmentalized himself, but rather someone who has woven together and unified himself so that all of the things that really give you joy are merged together. So I'd love to have you talk a little bit about this idea of getting married 100 times in 100 countries and about your travels around the world. And more importantly, I want to talk about how you apply yourself consciously to create the life and the lifestyle of your own making.
There's a whole bunch of questions there, but I'll do my very best. I think that you nailed it when you said the word conscious. I think it was certainly easy for me for much of my life to be in sort of a reaction mode. You step on my toes, I'm insulted, I'm offended, and then I walk around for the next week worried about who might be stepping on my toes next, and that's my life. And of course, I'm certainly oversimplifying things, but there came a point when I understood how reactionary I could be and how little that was working towards any goal that I had in my heart. Anything that I wanted, it didn't matter what it was, no matter how small, I had to navigate myself in order to get there. And the only way I knew how to do that was to be really actively conscious. This is a sort of a Kabbalistic principle. I don't want to bog anybody down too much with that, but it really had much more to do with me going, okay, what's really going on here? And what is it? What do I want? And if I want to get that thing, how do I go after it? And that was really about sort of my measure of consciousness. In other words, my wife, when I met her, I met my wife online, which is insane, but it works. And we're a lucky pair. She had written down, she wanted to travel with the love of her life and be happy. And that was sort of like her conscious intention. And so I was in the travel universe and I knew how to travel well. I mean, you know, I'm a guy who takes a handful of Dramamine to go anywhere, but I still go. And that's what we did. And the love and relationship part of it is that, and I know that we have a limited amount of time, but the long and the short of it was we got married a second time purely as a goof. Like, it was just a silly idea on my part. We were in Mexico and the woman standing next to us said, "I'm ordained." And I'm like, "Great, here's the ring, you go." And while she started talking about love, I remember thinking, oh, you know, there's a few things I didn't say to my wife during our set of vows. And I started talking about what it was that I wanted to do in order to provide her a safe space for her to go after whatever dream that she needed. Whatever she had in her heart, she should go do that. And so I said that, and even though it was sort of like a silly goof to me, it was not to my wife. The second wedding, I would argue, was more important than the first, because what I said to her in that second wedding had more meaning to it. And I realized the more we get married, the more safe and secure and solid she is within our relationship. The rest of the world, who knows what's going to be happening with that. But inside of our home, we know it's going down. You know what I mean? And we're not perfect. We argue and all. We do regular human things. But she also knows that I am not going anywhere. I'm on her team, and the act of getting marriage keeps solidifying what it is that our relationship is ultimately about. And it's about our stuff together, which is tricky and convoluted and scary, but we have that commitment. We're doing it together.
That's beautiful. Well, it is already, we've only got a couple of minutes left, Devin. So I want to close by, like, this is kind of a funny question for you. I would imagine that the answer is you book another trip, but maybe it's not. How do you celebrate when you have consciously created what it is that you desire and it's now in manifest form, whether it's another marriage or a book or another trip somewhere? What do you do to celebrate your sweet successes?
You know, I try to be present in them. It's another level of the consciousness. In other words, if I go on a trip somewhere, I can run around and eat a bunch of food off the street and that'll be fine. I'll take a bunch of pictures. But I think it's really important to really recognize that I'm walking down a street that might be, you know, 1,000 years old. A matter of fact, in Spain, you know, I took my father to a place called Carmona. And it had this 2,000-year-old history of the Moors and the Romans and the Byzantine Empire and all this incredible stuff. And I'd go in these buildings that were all 1,000 years old. And it was just a remarkable thing to go, oh, you know what? I'm doing this for my father, and I get to be present, and I get to look at these 500-year-old tiles, and that there was a human being who was participating in those creations. And it was a really remarkable thing, rather than just going click, 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 here, selfie, 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 and then move on to the next thing where I'm not creating any memory because I'm not really a part of it.
Beautiful. Well, I love that answer, that your form of celebration is being present. That's one of the best answers I've had so far on the podcast. So thank you, Devin, for being present here for our listeners. Thank you so much for the presence of mind that you had to go ahead and make that 10,000-mile journey and then write about it. And thank you so much for embodying in many ways what I like to call the creative age leader, where you are really leading from a place of consciousness and intentional creation in the way that you live your life. So I'm really appreciative for your time here today, Devin, and I thank you for coming on the show. So listeners, we'd love your feedback. Please let us know what you thought of today's show, or send in questions or guest suggestions to listeners at menonpurposepodcast.com. We might even give you a shout out on the show. We'd also love to have you apply if you think you might be a good fit to be a guest. You can do that by going to menonpurposepodcast.com and click on the big apply button. Thanks for tuning in. Keep your ears open. And remember, you are magnificent men. Mwah!
Thanks for tuning in, downloading, and listening. Be sure to review and rate Men on Purpose on iTunes and share with other men who can benefit from today's episode. Men on Purpose is the premier podcast series for informing, activating, and inspiring the leader who has made his money and knows that now is the time to make his mark. We welcome your feedback and guest suggestions and invite you to subscribe to our mailing list to be notified of each new episode at menonpurposepodcast.com.